Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on this Saturday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Now out in paperback is a great book by award-winning journalist Earl Swift. It's called Autobiography, A Classic Car, An Outlaw Motorhead, and 57 Years of the American Dream. It's a look at a classic 57 Chevy through all of its owners, and also a look at our car-obsessed society. Earl Swift, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Mark, thanks for having me.
How many times since the book has come out, Earl, has someone walked up to you and went, why didn't I have that idea? It seems a great idea to take a single car and trace its history through all of its owners. How did you come up with the idea?
Well, like a lot of people, I drove a succession of complete beaters when I was in my 20s, and I'd often find myself thinking about the poor saps who had owned them before me, and wondering whether they had ever been worthy pieces of machinery, or had always been the rust buckets that they were when I drove them. And over the years, that morphed, when I was a newspaper reporter in Norfolk, Virginia, into the realization that it might be a pretty cool story to try to find one old car and trace it back through everyone who had owned it. And through that otherwise unrelated fraternity of people, tell a bigger story. And I wasn't sure what that bigger story would be, but it seemed to me there had to be one, that, you know, the automobile was probably the dominant feature in American society that set us apart from every other people in the world. So that kind of planted the seed. It was in 2004 that I made the first attempt to trace a car.
And you found this classic 57 Chevy, Chevy wagon, I should say. And I learned from reading Autobiography that the 57 Chevy, you know, has become almost a cliche when you're talking about old, great American cars. But you say in the book that's a recent phenomenon.
It is. It's probably always been visual shorthand for its age, but it wasn't until the 70s, really, that the Chevy emerged as the iconic car of the 50s. And partly that's because I think it was produced in just vast numbers, and it survived longer than its competitors. You know, Chryslers, which were visually arresting and had much bigger fins, they all rusted out. There were very few remaining by a dozen years later. Ford's the same thing. They just did not stay on the road. And so by the time American Graffiti came out, really you had a kind of an overrepresentation of 57 Chevys. And, you know, it's an interesting looking car. It's a bit busy, if you want to be objective about it. But somehow all of its disparate elements seem to work pretty well together.
Well, this book, Autobiography, is about the car and its various owners, but it's the most recent owner that you focus on, Thomas Arney. And he is quite a character. Tommy is the main thread that follows through this book. And what a story he has. I mean, you could write the book and have left the car out there, Earl, and just written about Tommy and his life.
Yeah, well, the biography of the title really refers to the human biography as much as it does the automotive one. And by the way, Mark, you're probably the only person outside of law enforcement who's ever referred to him as Thomas Arney. he's Tommy in all references, pretty much. He's he's what my dad would call a rough customer. He's a two-time felon, fifth grade dropout, but a very smart man, undereducated, no question. But somebody who can read people, can read situations, who understands the world around him in ways that I can't even begin to attempt, and by the time the story opens in the fall of 2010, has put together an empire of businesses, and on paper is a millionaire. And he decides, as the 13th owner of this car, and by the way, when the story opens, he owns a classic car lot. That's what he calls it. Some would call it a junkyard on the line, the state line between Virginia and North Carolina, a place called Moyock Muscle. And he decides that he's going to try to rescue this completely thrashed 57 Chevy wagon because it possesses an attribute that no other car on his lot does, which is a complete ownership history, a very rare asset.
Earl Swift, he's the author of Autobiography, A Classic Car, An Outlaw Motorhead, and 57 Years of the American Dream, tracing all the owners of a single 57 Chevy. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. And this is, I was going to ask about being able to trace owners, because I know, you know, you get a title for a car and you have at least the last owner. Know that. How did the history of this 57 Chevy remain so complete?
Well, the reason this book had not been done before, to go back to your first question, is that there is really no paper trail in most states for car ownership. You go to the courthouse, you can trace your house back from deed to deed all the way to the, you know, to the days when the king owned the land. But with vehicles, what you find is that state DMVs tend to shred their, at least in the pre-digital days, tended to shred their ownership documents after a couple of title transfers. And so you can go back just a handful of years, maybe. And so what I found was that if I wanted to make this idea work, I had to find a car whose owner remembered enough about the person he or she bought from that I could figure out who that seller was and then repeat that process over and over and over. So it involved necessarily a great deal of luck as well as a little bit of shoe leather detective work. And there really is no easy way to do it. You have to get lucky. You have to run into people with good memories. And in this particular case, the owners didn't necessarily remember the name of the person they had bought from, but they remembered enough about that person and I was able to figure out who it was and find them. And just got enormously lucky.
And the man who went to the dealer and bought this 57 Chevy wagon new from the dealer was Nicholas Thornhill. And he kept it for quite some time and kept good care of it, too. And that probably lent itself to the success of this car's survival.
No question. Nicholas Thornhill was a boilermaker, civilian boilermaker for the Navy, and a very handy guy who knew new machines and how to keep them running. And he babied this car and did something that no one in 1957 really did, which was he kept it for 15 years. You know, these cars were designed to last three or four. You were expected to trade them in and get a new one at that point, if not sooner. And, you know, so technology and kind of the a very aggressive marketing of automobiles at the time dovetailed very nicely. Cars just didn't last. Nicholas made sure that this one did. And by the time he died in the early 70s, the car remained in terrific condition. It had been garaged throughout its first 15 years, and he passed it down to his grandson. It went from there.
Now, this car, it's interesting because this book, as much as it's about Tommy Arnie, as much as it's about this classic 57 Chevy, it's a look at how the middle class developed through all these decades, how things have changed the suburbs. And you were talking about the car manufacturing. You talk about the engineers who designed the 57 Chevy and how they were trying to get churned so cars didn't last long. And it's, you know, I remember the time where, you know, if a car got to 100,000 miles, it was done. And that's nothing compared to what cars can do these days.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, if you kept a car past 60,000 miles, you pretty much announced to the world that you were going to drive it till the wheels fell off because no one would buy it beyond
right.
that point. You know, I mean, 100,000 was a holy grail that only a few people achieved. They just weren't built to last. And people who, you know, and you hear it constantly, gosh, they just don't make cars like they used to. Well, thank God, because... cars today are so much superior to those of our grandfathers and fathers' generations that they're different machines altogether. The interesting thing of the 57 as a model year as kind of a point in automotive history to me is that it's right at about halfway, which is to say that the 57 Chevy had as much in common with the very first spindly horseless carriages as it does with the computer-controlled, much safer cars that we drive now.
Even though they are big behemoths, these cars are not as safe as they seem. You talked about that one test that was done with a lowly new compact car and a big old classic Chevy, and how much damage was done to that big behemoth.
Yeah, well, I mean, the old cars were body on frame. You had an unyielding frame to which the body, this welded box, was bolted. No crumple zones, hard surfaces throughout the interior, no seat belts. You know, that's kind of a big deal. And because they didn't have crumple zones, when they hit something immovable, instead of folding in predictable and intentional ways, as a car today does, they folded in very unpredictable and often completely disastrous ways. And so what you see in this, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, to celebrate its 50th anniversary in 2009, ran an 09 Malibu up against a 1959 Chevy Impala. And you see these two approaching each other at 40 miles an hour head on, and you just think, oh my God, that Malibu is toast. It's going to be completely creamed. But what you see through the cameras placed inside these cars is that actually it's the driver of the 59 Impala who would be killed a dozen different ways. And the driver of the Malibu, although you know the collision would make for a pretty lousy day on anybody's calendar, would probably limp away from the wreck.
I love your description of that 59, that the whole cast of Riverdance could dance on the hood of it. So
it's just an enormous car.
Well, Earl Swift, you spent 9 years researching and working on autobiography. What you obviously, from the story in the book and your time with Tommy Arney and there at Moyock Motors, had quite a few adventures. Out of 9 years working on autobiography, lots of research, lots of adventures along the way. Any favorite adventure from your time spent writing this book?
Well, there were quite a few moments of near terror, in which things could have gone badly. I witnessed a near fist fight between Tommy Arney and a Navy SEAL, which would have ended badly for everyone involved. But really, the thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is kind of a much quieter reporting adventure I had, which was that at some point in 2004, I thought I had a complete ownership history of this car. At that point, I had 9 owners, and the car had passed, I thought, from a gay physician, a guy named Alan Wilson, to a Chevy fanatic who had owned a 284-57 Chevys, a guy named Dave Simon. The timing seemed to be right for it having passed from one to the next. But there were details about the purchase that Dave Simon told me about that didn't add up, that didn't point to Alan Wilson, one of them being that he remembered the transaction occurring in a part of Norfolk, Virginia, in which the doctor had never lived. And there were other details that just didn't add up. So I had Dave recount his purchase in great detail, minute by minute. And what he told me was that he was on his way to a cheesesteak restaurant and on Tidewater Drive in Norfolk and had been making a left turn onto the street that ran alongside the strip shopping center where this cheesesteak place was located. And he thought there would be a curb cut from this side street into the parking lot. Well, it turned out there was not.
Ooh.
So he drove down this side street. Couldn't find a good place to turn around, so he turned right down a cul-de-sac a couple of blocks down. And while turning around in this cul-de-sac, spotted this 57 Chevy wagon sitting in someone's front yard. There was a couple working in the yard at the time. He stopped, talked to them, bought the car on the spot. Well, of course, this was not gay physician Alan Wilson, who he had been talking to in this front yard. So I got out got on MapQuest, figured out where the cheesesteak place was, found the side street that he turned down, found the cul-de-sac he had turned down, got out the city directory for, I think it was 1996, which listed, you know, the names and addresses of everyone who lived on that cul-de-sac, and then put it alongside the 2004 city directory and found that 4 people were still living on the block who had lived there 8 years before. Called those 4. None of them had owned a 57 Chevy. But one of them remembered something that Dave Simon had told me about the seller of this car, whose name he did not recall. And that was that this guy also drove a big red pickup with tandem axles. And this neighbor, this former neighbor, remembered that a neighbor of hers named Jeff Simmons, who had since moved away to North Carolina, had in fact owned a truck like that. So after a couple of weeks, I was able to trace Jeff Simmons down to a rural homestead north of Ahoskie, North Carolina. And he told me that he had, in fact, owned the car, sold it to Dave Simon. He had bought it from pawn shop in Norfolk, Jack's Classic Pawn. I went to Jack's Classic Pawn. Jack Reed, the owner, remembered the car well, remembered the transaction, remembered that he had bought it from a Chevy dealership who was serving as broker for the physician, the gay physician. And I checked back with the doctor. He said, you know, you're right. I did sell it to a pawn shop. And at that point, I had a complete ownership history. And that was a pretty exciting, adventurous moment.
Wow.
Long story to a short, long answer to a short question. But there
wow.
You go.
Well, great stories in here, and just love the concept, as I said, Earl, and love the book. Thank you for sharing some stories this morning.
Mark, thanks so much for having me.
Earl Swift, his book is Autobiography, A Classic Car, An Outlaw Motorhead, and 57 Years of the American Dream. You can learn more about it by visiting our website, wvxu.org, and it's got a little bit of something for car people if you're a car guy or girl, and also some great stories for all readers. Check it out, Autobiography by Earl Swift. This is The Book Club at 91.7. You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Technical director for today's show is Rick Andrus. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Web guru is Jim Nolan. Announcer is Robin Carey Allgaier. And I'm Mark Purcell. Anglophiles Unite. Next Saturday, I'll be speaking with Fraser McAlpine about his book, Stuff Brits Like, A Guide to What's Great About Great Britain. We'll cover it all, from apologizing needlessly to saucy seaside postcards, on The Book Club at 91.7 next Saturday morning. Stay tuned for Weekend Edition next on 91.7 WVXU.